A new report warns a major cyber attack could cost Australia billions of dollars. The Australia Digital Trust report found that the country's dependence on things like internet shopping could leave people open to massive disruption. The research was commissioned by Australian Cyber. Its CEO, Michelle Price, says the changes prompted by coronavirus have made things worse.
A significant outage could happen because of how interconnected our digital infrastructure now is. When we think about how our computers at home are networked through to our computers at work, in part because of the COVID pandemic and needing to move into work from home and school from home circumstances, that interconnectivity means that there could be a domino effect.
Australian Cyber CEO Michelle Price speaking to News Radio. For more on this and the future of cyber espionage, I'm joined by Danielle Cave, Deputy Director of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute's International Cyber Policy Centre. Welcome to RN Drive.
Thanks for having me, Patricia.
Let's start with a report. How is our reliance and trust in the online world leaving us vulnerable to attack?
Well, work like this by Aus Cyber on digital trust is really important. And you see the theme of trust playing out in Australia in so many different ways at the moment, whether it's the COVID Safe app or cyber scams that have COVID themes to them that are outlined on the Australian Cybersecurity Centre website, for example. And even, you know, things like trust related to the current hot topic of TikTok. You know, what groups do we trust? What platforms do we trust? And this digital trust is at the heart of so many of these debates. And I focused on this a little bit in my Australian Foreign Affairs essay, because COVID-19 has really changed things for all of us as we move to a work from home environment. There's not really that gap between our work lives and our home lives, and that makes us so much more vulnerable to cyber criminals.
In today's Australian Foreign Affairs Journal, you've published an essay on that topic, as I say, of cyber espionage and how it's evolving. How has the coronavirus pandemic influenced this field? What effect has it had on the world of cyber espionage? What should we be watching out for?
Well, it's actually having an effect on all intelligence communities around the world, not just the cyber actors. So COVID, for example, means that people can't travel. You know, intelligence communities all around the world can't do fly-in, fly-out operations. They can't necessarily, whether it's London or Washington, Beijing or Moscow, they can't necessarily access their secure buildings if there's things like outbreaks. Particularly for cyber espionage actors, what we know from really good media reporting and from government complaining about it is that in the early days of the virus, when we knew a little bit more about it, that cyber espionage actors were on the hunt looking for information. There was reporting that Iran, that South Korea, that Vietnam were collecting information from the World Health Organization by putting up fake Google sites. The Chinese government has complained that foreign espionage actors have been looking at their vaccines and their health systems. There's all kinds of complaints out there, and it shows us that espionage actors, even though it's very hard to pivot, were forced to pivot to find out as much information they could in those early months of the virus.
Has our hasty move to get millions working from home therefore made us more vulnerable? Is that really the point there?
Well, look, it has made us more vulnerable, but it's not like we had much of a choice. Look, I'm talking to you from my study at home, where I had to set up a home office and where I wasn't necessarily as prepared or cyber secure as arguably I would be in my office. But we all had to rush, I think, to make those changes. Cyber criminals are everywhere, and we all need to improve our cyber security. But what I look at in my essay is, you know, there's those types of people who are attractive to cyber espionage actors. So our politicians, for example, our senior policymakers, universities and academics, sometimes think tankers, industries, scientists who are involved in technology, those groups are vulnerable to cyber espionage actors and to cyber criminals.
So, you know, that hasty move, because we had no other choice, of course, has opened up all of these issues. In your essay, you say digital systems designed by governments to protect citizens during the pandemic could benefit adversaries in the future. Does that include things like the COVID Safe app, for instance?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'm not too worried about it in Australia's case, because I have an enormous faith in Australian public discourse to debate these types of things. But where I think it'll be really interesting is in authoritarian countries or countries leaning towards authoritarianism, where they have put in place things like electronic bracelets, where they're collecting more location data than arguably we are, where people can't move beyond particular areas without smartphone alerts or alerts going off on their bracelets. What will be interesting to see is if some of those governments long term try to leave some of those things in place. So in Australia, we have a media who would debate that and investigate any leader who tried to do that. We have vigorous civil society. Everybody gets to have their say. It's not really the same case in some Southeast Asian countries, and particularly not in China, for example.
Okay, well, let's look at China then. Australia's relationship with China is being tested, and you say that while they are our largest trading partner, they're also our largest intelligence adversary. Explain the level of threat Australia faces from China right now. Have we ever faced such a threat before, and are we equipped to manage it?
Well, what China's done over the last decade is invest more and more and more in intelligence collection. And a large part of that is their cyber espionage collection. So more and more and more, we see that our universities, we've had examples with our parliament, we've had examples with think tanks, are at threat by an actor like China, which is collecting more and more data. And that data is valuable to them in lots of different ways. But I think what China does, which is quite different to how other cyber and espionage actors act, is they collect things in a really wide-ranging way, and they go beyond what other governments might argue is traditional espionage. So they engage in things like IP theft as well. So Malcolm Turnbull actually discusses this in his recent autobiography about how wide-ranging it is and how there's been this sort of enormous uptick in the last decade.
What prevents China from engaging in a harmful cyber attack on Australia? Is it their own capability or our links to the US, our links to China? Do we have decent protections? What's your analysis there?
Well, I guess Australia is interesting to China, and you know, a lot of countries are interesting to China for a number of reasons. We're a Five Eyes country. We do have a difficult relationship with China at the moment, but we're in a boat where there's a lot of other allies and partners who also have very difficult and complicated relationships with China, and I think we really should get used to that. I mean, I think what stops them from, you know, if you mean, you know, raising it up and taking down critical infrastructure or, let's say, an electricity grid, that would likely be seen as an act of war. And really, it's more valuable for them and for other actors as well. They're not the only cyber espionage actor interested in Australia. It's more valuable for them to operate in this grey space below the threshold of war. So to engage in wide-ranging cyber espionage and IP theft, to engage in into things like foreign interference. The interesting thing is the Australian government is now gripping up in those areas, and it has done so over the last few years. So we've seen things like the recent AFP raid on the home of a New South Wales politician. We've got the Foreign Influence Transparency Scheme, and some of these new policies and legislation and moves to potentially charge people engaged in this malicious activity, whether it's online or offline, should have a really good deterrence effect on others seeking to do that sort of harm in Australia.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Danielle Cave is the Deputy Director at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute's International Cyber Policy Centre. And if you want to read more on this, you can find her essay in the latest issue of Australian Foreign Affairs. This is RN Drive.